Hello and welcome to the Fourth Seat Podcast. My name is Mayuk and I am joined by Aditya from Boston. Hey, Adi, how are you?
Hey, I'm good. Happy New Year, first of all our listeners.
Happy New Year. Happy New Year to everyone listening. And you must have guessed it by now that we are missing Rahul on the show today. And he is actually having a good time back in India. So first it was you, Adi, and then it's Rahul right now in India.
I think you are due a visit.
Yeah. It seems like I'll be the next one going to India. Hopefully that is the case. Let's see.
So you are entering a new decade now. So क्या thoughts है मतलब? वैसा technically हर साल नया decade बन सकता है ना?
हाँ, I mean it depends कि तुम count कहाँ से शुरू करो.
तो ये बोल सकते हैं ना हम लोग कि हम जहाँ खड़े हैं हमारा डेकेड वहीं से शुरू होता है.
एग्जैक्टली. तो बेसिकली आई मीन आई डोंट नो ये इट इज स्टिल अप फॉर डिबेट कि 2020 खत्म हुआ तो डेकेड खत्म होता है कि 2019 खत्म हुआ तो डेकेड खत्म होता है.
नहीं तो सीधा सब लोग अपना अपना डेकेड गिनो ना. जब तुम पैदा हुआ तब से तुम्हारा डेकेड शुरू होता है. तो
या आई मीन आई वाज थिंकिंग ऑन द लाइन
क्राइस्ट का बर्थडे को हम लोग डेकेड काउंट करने के लिए चालू यूज किया. तो तुम लोग सब लोग पर्सनलाइज कर लो ना कैलेंडर को अपना.
तो बेसिकली आई मीन माय थिंकिंग वाज द फैक्ट दैट यू नो वी काउंटेड 2000 एज द मिलेनियम. मतलब वो आइडियली 2000 एंड हुआ तो
दैट इज बिकॉज मेला में वो गाना आ गया ना. तो फिर उसके बाद देयर इज नो गोइंग बैक.
देखो 2000 जमाना आ गया.
हाँ, बस मतलब वो गाना आ गया मतलब हो गया ना. अभी देयर इज नो नेगोशिएशन.
वो गाने के पहले किसको Y2K का प्रॉब्लम सूझा नहीं
था.
वो गाना आया तब लगा अरे नहीं है Y2K आ रहा है अभी.
लाइक दैट इज आमिर खान का भाई का ओनली कंट्रीब्यूशन टू द वर्ल्ड. और मेला का क्या रेफरेंस पॉइंट है देख. मतलब तू तेरे को थोड़ा भी डाउट रहेगा मेला कभी रिलीज हुआ तो वो गाने से तेरे को समझ में आ जाएगा. लाइक मेटा है वो लोग.
हाँ मतलब ऐसा आमिर खान स्टार्टेड द डिकेड विथ और एंडेड द मिलेनियम विथ
मेला. और दिस इज लाइक दैट. वो हांगकांग प्रोटेस्ट में ना प्रोटेस्टर्स आर यूजिंग लाइक अपना बैनर पे डेटेड लिख के वो लोग फोटो खिंचा रहे बिकॉज दे डोंट वांट पीपल टू यूज इट आउट ऑफ कॉन्टेक्स्ट. तो आई थिंक फैजल खान क्या उसका नाम क्या है उसका भाई का उसने भी आमिर खान ने और उसने भी वही किया मूवी में गाना डाल दिया वो लोग ने. सो दैट यू नेवर हैव टू डाउट कब आया था.
मतलब ऐसा आई विश कि ये टर्निंग पॉइंट फ्रॉम 1999 to 2000 हैड मोर क्या बोलते हैं उसको होना चाहिए था. बट यू कैन ऑल्सो से जो लोग फैंस है वो आदमी के कि कहो ना प्यार है भी रिलीज हुआ 99 में. थिंग्स वेंट डाउन हिल फॉर दैट पर्सन आफ्टर दैट.
99 वॉज अ वेरी बैड ईयर इन अदरवाइज ऑल्सो ना. क्रिकेट में अपन वर्ल्ड कप हारा फिर अपना ऑस्ट्रेलिया में धुलाई हुआ उसके बाद
मैच फिक्सिंग स्कैंडल
हुआ. मतलब 99 द टर्न ऑफ द डेकेड वाज काफी नॉट वेरी गुड.
या एंड आई थिंक वी लॉस्ट
3-0 क्रिकेट मैच
एंड वी लॉस्ट अगेंस्ट पाकिस्तान राइट.
आई थिंक सब कुछ
99 वाज आल्सो या द चेन्नई टेस्ट एंड एवरीथिंग.
हां एशियन वो शोएब अख्तर का the fastest growing youtuber ka wickets Sachin. Tere ko malum hai ye Shoaib Akhtar was featured on some YouTube ka yearly roundup or something.
Seriously?
Haan.
Oh my god, I think we should put up our audios on YouTube as a video format. So
and someday we should invite Shoaib and Noman Niaz.
हाँ तो 99 में इतना कुछ हुआ और इन द एंड मेला से मिलेनियम खत्म हुआ. तो बेसिकली व्हाट आई वाज सेइंग इज आई यूज्ड टू कंसीडर द नॉट्स 2001-2003 एज लेट्स से वन डेकेड. तो 2010 से शुरू करके द टेंस वाज वन डेकेड एंड 19 में खत्म हुआ वो टेंस एंड लेट्स इमेजिन 2020 इज अ न्यू डेकेड फॉर आवर रेफरेंस पर्पसेस राइट.
दैट इज ट्रू. तो हम लोग कहीं रेफरेंस पॉइंट कोई भी लगा सकते.
Yeah, so looking back, I mean, a most good part of our 20s were spent in the tens.
Yes.
This decade, right? And do you remember what you were doing in January 2010?
January 2010, I think we share a memory. We had our convocation, jisme upma diya tha hum log ko.
So we graduated 2009.
Yeah, but our convocation and degrees were awarded in 2010, January.
अच्छा अच्छा अच्छा
और
हाँ
कॉलेज का नाम नहीं लेते हम लोग, बिकॉज उसके पास पैसा बहुत है, कभी हमको स्यू कर देगा वो तो. बट इतना
बाय द
इतना
वे
इतना वी कैन टेल द ऑडियंस कि हमारा कॉलेज में हम लोग पहले ले लिया है क्या नाम उसका, तो
हमने फर्स्ट एपिसोड में ले लिया
उसका
है.
ऑडियो क्वालिटी बहुत गंदा था. तो
इफ आवर लिसनर्स हैव लिसन टू आवर वेरी फर्स्ट एपिसोड द ओरिजिन्स देन दे वुड नो कि हम लोग कौन से कॉलेज से है. बट
अगर
वी कैन
अगर वेगली बोलना है तो वो कॉलेज में ऐसा आईएसएल और आईपीएल का मैच सब होता है.
हाँ तो हमारे कॉलेज के स्टेडियम में एक्चुअली हम लोग ने 2008 फर्स्ट ईयर ऑफ आईपीएल हम लोग ने फ्री में आईपीएल के मैचेस देखे हैं वो स्टेडियम में. तो नाउ यू नो व्हिच कॉलेज वी
डू यू नो इवन बिफोर आईपीएल अपना एक इनविटेशनल टूर्नामेंट होता था वो लोग का जिसमें यूसुफ पठान और सहवाग खेल के गया.
हाँ क्या नो आई हैव नॉट
यू आर नॉट अवेयर. अच्छा ये एवरी ईयर होता है. मतलब इफ दोज दिस इज लाइक अ ट्रिक क्वेश्चन पीपल शुड राइट टू अस कि तुम लोग गेस किया कि नहीं अभी तक. तो वो वाला ग्राउंड में ना हर साल वो बंदे का हु ऑल्सो हैपेंस टू बी एनसीपी कांग्रेस का बहुत खास शरद पवार का और भी थोड़ा हिंट दे रहा है. तो उसका स्टेडियम को हर साल ये लोग इनविटेशनल टूर्नामेंट कराता था स्टेडियम के अंदर. एंड वन ऑफ जस्ट बिफोर द आईपीएल देयर वाज दिस इनविटेशनल टूर्नामेंट जो ऐसा ओपन था एंट्री. एंड देयर आर टीम्स लाइक ओएनजीसी एंड ऑल दीज some clubs like Akbar Travels and all those people who play.
I remember.
And Sehwag ne na udhar wo basically kya hota tha ki wo garibon ka IPL hai. Usme teen international class ka player hoga. Baki sab Shardul Thakur se bhi gandal ho gaye. To wo Sehwag 25 ball mein sab 100 mara malum hai kya wo match mein.
I remember my friends bunking college to go and watch that.
I watched Sehwag live in that match scoring a 28 ball 100 or something like that. And सामने बॉलर वाज लाइक श्रीकांत वाघ और ये लोग सब डाल रहा था बोलिंग.
एंड फॉर फर्दर हिंट्स बेसिकली हिंदी मूवीज में अगर कोई क्रिकेट का सीन या सीक्वेंस शूट हुआ तो ये
ग्राउंड में होता है.
तो इसी ग्राउंड में
इंक्लूडिंग
यू माइट
रिसेंटली वो जो क्या इनसाइड एज उसमें भी
Inside Edge, Mahendra Singh Dhoni ka movie aur going further back victory Harman Baweja ka victory
pura everything. Victory ka pura tournament udhar hi shoot hua hai.
Ha, to this stadium has hosted World Cups.
Yeah, imaginary World Cups.
Imaginary World
and Cups. Real IPL finals.
हाँ तो डैट रिमाइंड्स मी एक्चुअली तो जनवरी 2010 में अगर हमारा कॉन्वोकेशन था वन ऑफ माय I think probably my only memory of that convocation ceremony is Abe Kurvilla was present.
Yeah, he was Chief Guest, no?
Abe Kurvilla was the, I don't know, I think he's the sports body ka kuch to tha.
Aur wo gown pehen ke chal raha tha, mere ko yaad aaya abhi. He was wearing that full-fledged gown.
Yeah, super long, tall person and with a long
gown. With a 7-wicket haul in Barbados once. 81 all out test match.
Touted by Tendulkar to be one of the best Indian bowlers.
As with all of Tendulkar, Tendulkar ko gali diye bina kaisa, you cannot start the decade without that, na? To wo vada pav kaisa khane ka ye bata rahe public ko. मतलब
नया ट्वीट आया
अजिंक्य रहाणे और तेंदुलकर मतलब देश का सब प्रॉब्लम छोड़ के वो लोग वड़ा पाव कैसा खाने का वो लोग फोकस काफी अच्छा कर रहा है कि कौन सा चटनी डालना मांगता है तेंदुलकर काफी काफी.
इनफैक्ट तेंदुलकर ने जो ओपिनियन दिया वो रहाणे के ट्वीट के ऑप्शंस में
था ही नहीं. तेंदुलकर ने ज्यादा डिस्क्रिप्शन दिया ना.
Exactly.
रायने खाली पूछा कैसा खाएगा तू, मतलब वड़ा में तीखा चटनी कितना डालना होता है. तेंदुलकर तो सब
नहीं, उसने पूछा कि डू यू लाइक इट विद चाय विदाउट चाय कि ऐसे ही वड़ा पाव. तो वो तेंदुलकर फिर सचिन आया और पूरा अपना मास्टर क्लास दिखा के गया.
अपना शारदाश्रम आया उसका शिवाजी पार्क उसके अंदर का.
आई एम सरप्राइज्ड कि अभी तक कामली ने ट्वीट नहीं किया उसने.
कामली आएगा मतलब कामली ने एक पूरा वीडियो किया है वे कि वड़ा पाव कैसा खाने का.
वड़ा पाव पे
गो एंड सर्च फॉर इट. आई माइट पुट इट अप इन द डिस्क्रिप्शन लेटर ऑन.
वेरी वेरी
सो गोइंग बैक टू
अमेजिंग अमेजिंग सजेशंस फॉर अ कलिनरी ब्लॉग.
सो हम लोग बेसिकली ऐसा फालतूगिरी कर रहा था. जनवरी में अपने पास कुछ था नहीं ना 2010 में करने के लिए.
नहीं नहीं तो आई मीन जस्ट फॉर कॉन्टेक्स्ट व्हाट हैपेंड इज 2009 वी ग्रेजुएटेड विद अ डिग्री इन बायोटेक्नोलॉजी एंड फॉर रीजंस नॉट क्लियर टू अस वी एक्चुअली गॉट इनटू अ बायोटेक्नोलॉजी प्रोग्राम वी आर बेसिकली गेटिंग अ
माय रीजन इज क्लियर मैं लिफ्ट देखा बिल्डिंग का अच्छा लगा तो कर लिया डिसाइड अच्छा मतलब ऐसा ही लिफ्ट चाहिए रोज मतलब
कैप्सूल लिफ्ट नाइस ब्रोशर
फैंटास्टिक ब्रोशर मतलब ब्रोशर देखा ना तू तेरे लगेगा ऐसा मतलब हार्वर्ड हार्वर्ड से उसमें सब यूनिवर्सिटी का नाम भी लिखा रहता दुनिया का वो ब्रोशर में
अच्छा 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 हाँ 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 तो वी गॉट इन टू दिस डिग्री प्रोग्राम एंड बाय 2009 सेवरल थिंग्स हैपेंड दैट बोथ ऑफ आई मीन आई कैनॉट स्पीक फॉर एवरीवन एल्स बट एटलीस्ट द टू ऑफ अस डिसाइडेड दैट वी आर नॉट गोइंग टू सिट फॉर कैंपस प्लेसमेंट्स व्हिच हैपेंड टू बी विद आईटी कंपनीज सो आई नो सेवरल पीपल हु गॉट रिक्रूटेड इन टू आईटी कंपनीज
थ्रू कैंपस प्लेसमेंट्स
या आई मीन सम पैथेटिक सेल्स जॉब टाइप positions in life science, so-called life science companies.
Nothing
but,
to do with our degrees, I don't, basically.
Nothing to do with our degrees or our specialization.
Which we anyway, specialization bolna bhi usme is very vague in any sense, any case, right?
Yeah,
what is
yeah.
biotechnology, basically? Hum log aise hi nikala 4 saal.
So, I mean, at least in my case, in the process of getting the degree somehow and working in some labs here and there, somehow I got interested in fundamental research and science. And I realized ki the amount of lab exposure or experience that I am getting in this college or university is obviously non-existent. So, and I also did not want to be in an IT company or any other job. So I decided to look for opportunities to just hone my research skills a little bit more. And before we reach January 2010, we were spending a lot of time trying to find opportunities to do research. Am I right?
So we were basically walking around the whole of Bombay. And at that point, I do not know how we had that self-confidence. We were basically ignorant. Ki hum logon ka degree had no, absolutely no value, right? Anywhere. We have zero idea of what research involves. And we...
Well, except if you wanted to be in an IT company.
हम लोग we used to walk up to every lab, right? तो जो भी हम लोगों का vicinity में दिखा तो you would just walk up and knock their doors and ask कि हमको 6 महीना chance दे दो type. मतलब ये अगर तुम struggling phase बोल सकते हैं ना अगर Bollywood का जो it is equivalent of that. वो typical नहीं होता है. मेरा लोखंड वाला का जो actor का struggle रहता है. This we were doing the.
या फिर यू कैन ऑल्सो से कि प्लेटफॉर्म पे सोता था टाइप्स
हां अमिताभ बच्चन जो बोला ना मरीन ड्राइव पे सोता था बेंच पे तो वो बट इतना ही है कि हम लोग को घर था सोने के लिए खाना मिलता था तो बट हम लोग यस करने के लिए कुछ था नहीं तो वी यूज्ड टू जस्ट वॉक अराउंड लुकिंग फॉर दिस एंड एज
बट दिस इज बिफोर 2010 एंड दिस इज 2009 मिड टू लेट 2009 दैट्स करेक्ट
तो वो टाइम में देन वी वर लकी इनफ that most people basically rejected us. Ek lab to mereko yaad hai ki that prof let us in. He confused him us to be IIT BTECs basically. Ek lab mein IIT mein hi. Usko laga ki we are students of the same institution. So he said yeah you can do an intern types. और वो बोला फिर कौन सा department करके पूछा. Then we said हम लोग ये institute का नहीं है. फिर वो उसने अपना then he changed he said abhi mera visiting card rakh lo aur mere ko email karo so and we went back home to aisa bahut mahina chala hai sir
yeah and then just for reference I mean it was two of us and also one of our friends Subbu so mostly we three of us were together looking for research opportunities
See, the only good part of that phase is we used to guzzle a lot of vada pav and matlab consume vada pav fir tera mcdonald's mein wo sasta 25 rupaye wala mekalu tikki
See, basically, I mean, we were struggling and we were ignorant, so we were well-fed. So, khana wana bahut
struggle with privilege. Ki,
yeah, privileged, bahut hi privileged struggle tha wo.
aur kya matlab, hum logon ka dejection kya hota tha? Kuch nahi mila matlab, ek idhar to faltu jagah mein khichdi biryani kha ke wapas aata tha.
Sanman.
Remember? That was our struggle, basically.
Yeah, yeah. So by the way, Sanman is, I mean, supposedly very popular among Mumbai cricketers.
Oh, is it?
So I read in Sanjay Manjrekar's book ki after a practice session or a match, in Wankhede, you know, they used to, or let's say even before Wankhede, you know, if they were in college or school level cricket, they used to walk up to
Salman was from Azad. Quite cheap, right? For its location and yes. The food, it was very cheap, as a very inexpensive that way.
Yeah, yeah.
उनको इतना दिमाग नहीं है सब अंदर घुस के पूरा पॉडकास्ट सुनने का. तो और थोड़ा एडिशनल कॉन्टेक्स्ट देने के लिए ना, हम लोगों का इतना जीरो आइडिया ऑफ रिसर्च था बीटेक में कि हम लोगों का मैथ्स टीचर उस आधा सब्जेक्ट वो ओमिट कर देती थी when we actually had a math course, and later she was caught in some exam का कोई fudging scandal, paper leak किया उसने ऐसा सब. और
तो there were so many such stories. In fact, the thing is, if you are doing a degree in biotechnology, one of the very important things to be considered are maths and physics. ठीक है, तो especially statistics, right? Statistics और physics के नाम पे we were doing some very crappy courses. तो I mean obviously we did not have a lot of idea about research, but somehow we had managed to get interested in fundamental science. I don't know what is how it came in your case. In my, I think in a couple of summers I used to work in Tata Cancer Center. So in summers, I used to work in Tata Cancer Center, and then I saw how a lab functions, how they read papers, and how lab meetings happen. And I got interested because a lot of the graduate students are really good in there. So that's how I got interested, and I thought, ki nahin, yahi karna hai. And so after graduating, I was along with you guys looking for positions here and there. So
it happened like, I would say it happened much later. You at least had a productive phase in your undergrad. I didn't even have that essentially. So main to wo bhi nahi kiya, matlab chutti mein to kuch bhi nahi kiya re main. But that reminds me ki towards the end is when I started getting, I was, of course, I used to get interested in a few of the courses. Okay, so that degree being such an aimless degree, one thing it actually added was that at least it had a lot of wide range of subjects. Whether it was taught to us or not is a completely different thing. But
yes, I would say that is one of the positives. Ki we were exposed to a lot
jargons
of
jargons and keywords, basically.
Yes, and then we were exposed to a lot of, let's say, very unrelated and diverse disciplines there. So wo ek tha, I mean, it did not connect at that time, but then later on when we worked in a lab, we realized ki how these things are connected.
So essentially what worked for me was this fact that at least we had something which taught us about this intersection of computing and biology and things like that, which later on I took up as a career. But at that point, I could see that this is something I could do, but not that it was taught very well to us, obviously.
Most of the things were self-taught.
That computing, basically a computer lab I used to use, and most of us would appreciate going there because wahan pe internet free tha.
और एसी भी
था. तो वहां बैठता था लोग, मैच का स्कोर और देखा है, मतलब मैं वो 2008 का सीबी सीरीज सब था ना, जो इंडिया जीता ट्राई सीरीज,
सीबी एंड लॉट ऑफ इंडिया
श्रीलंका मैचेस, क्रिक इन्फो में वो रूम में बैठ के देखा है. दैट इज लाइक व्हेन इंटरनेट इज नॉट लाइक ऑल परवेसिव एज टुडे बेसिकली.
या एंड आल्सो वन थिंग आई फॉरगॉट टू मेंशन इज, आई मीन, आई स्पोक अबाउट वर्किंग इन अ लैब इन टाटा इन द समर. The reason I chose to do that is because very early in engineering, I figured out that I want to pursue higher studies in the US or elsewhere. And I also wanted to take up GRE and stuff. One summer, I think it was 2007 summer, I spent the entire summer studying for GRE and preparing for GRE. And then I realized ki nahin, I need some research experience. So I went 2008 summer, I went to this lab in Tata and got some research experience. And then I realized ki perhaps I should do a PhD. And that's why in 2009, after graduating, I was looking for some place to hone my research skills or get some research experience under the belt.
Yeah. And also, in my case, the early driving force was largely because I knew that us degree ke saath mein, there is nothing that you are going to achieve. In fact, there were even questions of legitimacy of that degree when we were just beginning, right?
Yeah. I mean, right now we know ki UGC pretty much recognizes everything. Jo bhi aayega, UGC recognize kar dega. But at that time, we were sort of thinking that UGC is this amazing body which will not recognize our
AICTE.
उसका एक्रेडिशन तो मिल गया ना,
बाद में मिल गया, मतलब हम लोग जब शुरू में ज्वाइन किया था, सो द इंटरेस्टिंग स्टोरी इज दैट द फर्स्ट डे जब हम लोग इसके लिए बैठा था, आई माइट हैव टोल्ड दिस इन द फर्स्ट एपिसोड व्हिच मेनी माइट नॉट हैव लिसन्ड टू, सो व्हेन वी वर देयर फॉर दैट स्कैम ऑफ अ काउंसलिंग सेशन, तेरे को मालूम है क्या कि कौन सा डिग्री में कौन से कोर्स में तेरा नंबर आएगा टाइप्स, तो एंड देन फिर एक रूम में लेके जाके बेसिकली वो रूम में होता क्या था, वो बोलता था डिमांड ड्राफ्ट किधर है, बेसिकली एंड काउंसलिंग का एंड वाज दिस डीडी निकालो, तो उस टाइम पे ना कोई तो एक आंटी टाइप कोई बैठी तेरे बाजू में, सम अदर पेरेंट पेरेंट ऑफ सम अदर स्टूडेंट, आई डोंट नो वो कौन था, वो सभी मेरे को याद नहीं है, तो हाँ अच्छा। तो वो आंटी बोलती है कि आपको मालूम है क्या, रिकॉग्नाइज नहीं है कॉलेज and first couple of years, couple of semesters तो हम लोग हमेशा इसमें ही निकल गया कि अपना recognition मिला क्या यही चीज में basically, so that is when I had way back like first semester even without making a qualified decision what to do, one thing I knew was कि just surviving with a this BTech particularly is not going to be possible practical.
Yeah, there is no way you are going to be considered high skilled in any. I mean, that's true for any engineering degree, bachelor's karke kuch
definitely
hota
now.
Hai.
10 years ago, probably there would still have been some room, but I don't think now there is any room that way.
Nahi. So going back to 2010, I think by that time we had found our respective research positions, so as to say, right? So 2009, after searching for a couple of months or a few months, I joined a lab, a cell biology lab in Tata Institute of Fundamental Research, TIFR, where I was a research assistant kind of person
in a
for
big
one
lab,
year.
I would say at some stage, right?
Yeah, it is a well-recognized lab within India. And yeah, good publication record. I actually learned to read papers in that
which
lab.
Which we were never taught in school. So, but... By papers, like a lot of engineers in India, engineering as a discipline has nothing to do with any kind of original research, right? We are basically, what we do is end up reading textbooks, largely.
Yeah, very different from the education system here in the US or Europe for that matter.
So unless you are in some big institute, like you are in the real cream of the university system in India, you have absolutely no idea as to what a research paper is. It might be different if you are in the IITs or IISc and all these places, but from a run-of-the-mill college like ours, we had no clue.
Well, I mean, I can actually bet that 95 to 99% of engineers coming out of India have never read a research paper. So I mean, I think I can bet.
The only thing that changes is like in a bigger institute, you have more exposure to other departments and stuff, which none of us ever had. And there was no overlap and none of these skills we had. So you go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, so I got this position in TIFR, a very reputed institute in India. I think many of our listeners may know about that as a fundamental research institute. And Adi, you were in IIT.
I was in IIT roughly around the same time. So I got lucky with the fact that there was a faculty who had very recently set up his lab. And that being around the month of August or September, that was the PhD enrollments had already finished. So he didn't have students to begin with. And we happened to write to a lot of people. And this was one lab where we got a response. So when I joined, all he asked me was, can you code a little? So my idea was, ki kya hai? Matlab, coding kya hi hai? And I basically bluffed my way through that day. I was not very good at it. So I had to say that, agree to the, I had to lie to him saying that I can code. Or pehla din, little did I know ki then I get access to a lab, which is at that moment still getting set up. So we do not even have a proper lab space at that point. The actual lab space is still being constructed and stuff like that. So I was in a space which was basically like a dumping room types. And but I get access to a new system and stuff like that. My boss tells me ki Linux use kar lete ho na, Unix are you comfortable? Wo bhi nahi aata mere ko, wo bhi fake kaam hai ki aata hai karke.
So does that person now know that you bluffed your way through?
I happened to do my PhD with him later on, so I guess it turned out fine eventually. So but I can vouch for it that that day I was bluffing my way through, which is, so one thing my degree taught us, our BTech enables you to do is bluff your way through.
lot of experience with Viva and stuff.
So 10 years ago, matlab, the fact that we knew nothing, we were more confident, right?
Yeah, sometimes ignorance is bliss, right?
So like very confident. So we had with this very absolutely shitty article jo hum log publish kiya, matlab you said you said that you didn't know how to read a research paper till you went to TIFR. I'd say that we published the research paper before we could read a research paper.
We started the other way around. So just for context, in 2009, I, Addy, and some of our friends, we worked in a chemical analysis lab for our final thesis project for
occupational hazards in that place, by the way.
Not following any norms or industrial standards, we must add. The place itself
used to work as an industrial standards measuring lab. The irony.
Yes, and the irony is that, and it itself does not adhere to most, if not safety, all safety standards. But nonetheless, we did some work there and we published a paper. And please do not search for that paper. And we do not want that paper associated with us at all.
So even I started learning how to read a research paper. So the first myth that got broken was that I used to think a lot of my undergrad faculty knows a lot. So the first day I was told by this lab where I joined, to read a research paper, and he said that we'll start working along these lines. So I went back with that research paper to our college, and I asked my prof, ki, "Are ye samjha sakta hai kya?" He's like, "I have no clue what this is, basically."
So how did you manage to? Teach
again,
yourself?
I bluffed my way through. So it took me had I done a proper degree, I would probably have figured out how that paper works in a month, but without this it took me like 3 or 4 months, and my boss that time was very patient with all this, so that helps basically.
And then you said you continued your PhD.
By early 2010 I had given my GATE at that point, along with my early GRE. So I also had an admit from a year ago. So it wasn't like we were stressed in that sense. I had an admit, which a lot of people may not know this, so we should just tell that the US application system allows you to defer your admits. So if you have an admit for July or August, and if you want to defer it by a semester or two, you can always request the university to give you a deferred admit.
And unfortunately, I had not applied to that department that you had applied to in the US. And I did not have an admit at that time. And just to put it out there, both of us were not applying for masters, but solely for PhD programs. Yeah. So you had an admit, but you were not entirely satisfied with that. So you deferred it. I did not have an admit at all. And you proceeded.
And the reasons were also largely financial, because the fellowships weren't very good. And that happened to be the time of global fund cuts in universities and stuff like that. Which is like the.
Yes, and looking back, I would definitely say that you did a good job not taking that up in 2009 itself, right?
So I ended up doing a master's eventually, in 2010 because I still felt like I could do with a couple of years of actual learning instead of going out. I thought like I'll do a couple of years of masters and then decide. But by the time I was in my masters and I actually did, for the first time, I was doing courses the way they are supposed to be. And in IIT, the one good thing was we had faculty who were accessible and the courses are evaluated. The first thing that strikes you is that courses are evaluated in a very different manner, right? As opposed to our standard Bombay University places. When you go to a proper university, you have all sorts of different ways of evaluation, like open book exams based on mini projects and all these kind of different ways of learning.
Yeah, I mean, basically, you are tested on whether you have an ability to think or not. And if you have an ability to think, I mean, how good you are thinking. So it basically, I mean, apart from the scientific concepts which are there, I mean,
which you will learn eventually.
Apart from analysis. Yeah, but then you are basically taught to think.
So that's what. Some of my best academic track record happens to be after my BTEC. My BTEC, I barely scraped through at that point. But when the exam system started to change, I got better. And that is when I got more confident of the fact that I can do my research. And I happened to continue there with my PhD. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of similar in my case because you were in computational biology, but I was in developmental biology at that time in TIFR, and my complete ignorance of basic concepts and theories were clear when I started reading papers or interacting with my lab mates, right? So, I mean, I had to, I did not have to really bluff that much, but I had to tell them, see, I have an engineering degree, not a fundamental science degree, so I'm not aware of that. So even the basic theories that are associated with the central dogmas of biology,
or even basic physics absolutely required to understand how an instrument works, even that was very bad in my case.
Absolutely. I mean, I was in TIFR, I was terrified of the confocal microscope. I mean, I did not want to use it. And eventually it turns out my PhD thesis and specialization was on state-of-the-art microscopy. But then my 2010, I mean, I knew so little or nothing about microscopy that I was terrified getting in there, and I did not want to use it, thinking that I'll probably screw it up. So I let go of that opportunity to do some independent microscopy at that time, just because those things are, you know, like a million dollar machines. And at that time, we did not have so many of them in India.
One thing I benefited while doing my coursework during my MTech is I didn't do a conventional linear MTech in that fashion. So I did an MTech in environmental engineering, which happened to have a lot of chemical engineering and fluid mechanics and stuff like that. Things which we hadn't learned very well during our...
Not very well. I would say we did not have any idea.
during our BTEC. Yeah. So even stuff which included these principles, they were just like brushed aside very quickly by our college, by our excellent teachers. So I happened to do those kind of things. And my MTEC obviously will... My CV, if I look at it today, looks very haphazard. But I can I can say that I gained a lot from actually not doing a very methodical BTEC and an MTEC in the same degrees. So the stuff I learned in my master's actually helped help cement some of the principles that I would use later on in a different context. So this is something we tend to miss out in the Indian education system, right? So we box ourselves into the very standard physics, chemistry, maths, biology, computers, and whatnot.
Yeah, and I faced that. So when I came to the US in July 2010, after I spent a year in TIFR, I was simultaneously also applying for PhD programs here in the US. I decided to join the University of Georgia for its basic science programs. I got into cell biology, and when I was a teaching assistant, I realized, you know, how kids here are thinking independently already. You know, they may be in their first or second year of college, but still, you know, let's say they have a project of their own, they will do it on their own or not do it saying, see, I have no idea. I mean, I can try, but I need like a month more, which in some cases they are probably just lying and lazy. But in most cases, you know, they'll come back and then they'll show you what they have done on their own. It could be shitty, but at least it's their own and not
rather than or, than this sham that we go through where we have to submit it by a deadline. And even if you do not know it, you copy it from somewhere and or during the YY you bluff your way through. That is all we do, right? Largely. In our standard systems.
Yeah.
So and sometimes you benefit from actually so if you are a so one thing I learned later on is that okay, at some point I was struggling with the idea as to how I defend my M.Tech being in a completely different degree. So that's completely different. So I towards the end I so what it if when you do something like this, if when you learn like different very absolutely unrelated subjects, what it helps you with is, say you have a theory in one field and you might very naively think that it is applicable to only your discipline. But when you are trying to, and when you work in a separate discipline with a background which is different, you might have insights which is completely different to the people who are working in that field. So that freshens up the way you look at a problem. So
And it's true, like, so, I mean, most science, and I would say, like, all science and most disciplines are interdisciplinary after a certain point, right? So, you, in your school textbooks and things like that, you have separate subjects and you're learning theories in physics, maths, and chemistry. But at one point, you'll realize in your science research that things are
connected. And we start believing that garbage, right? So, we are told in school that it is physics, chemistry, maths, biology. And a lot of kids in 12th, basically look at it like maths versus biology. Matlab aisa nahi hai ki maths or biology asli duniya mein ladai kar raha hai. Matlab,
I mean, everything, they go hand in hand, right? They completely go hand in hand. I mean, without a very strong foundation in statistics, I mean, you are not going to do any kind of research.
No research is actually valid without statistical validation. So,
exactly. So, I mean, you may not be a big fan of maths, but then you, I mean, if you are interested in a certain field of research, you'll have to go back and, you know, just retrain yourself on certain aspects that are potentially important to you. So, I mean, just to give an example from my side, because I stated that I did a lot of high-end microscopy, I mean, I had to take a class and find out, you know, basically the physics that goes behind a microscope, right? I cannot just jump on a microscope and be great at it.
Otherwise you end up treating it like a black box.
Yeah, I mean, you can, I mean, like the saying goes, right, in English, I mean, if you give a keyboard to a monkey, after certain million years, the monkey will probably write a play, Shakespearean play, right? So, if you are not very good with the fundamental concepts, you will sit in front of a microscope and you spend a year on it and finally you'll get some good image. But that's not how it works. That is not how it will help you, improve your microscopy skills or get to exactly
learning something from first principles is what you are trying to convey.
Exactly. So when I took courses about microscopy, that course was not biology. It was basically a lot to do with quantum physics and optics, right? And what the hell do I know about quantum physics and optics, right? So there has to be some kind of retraining and training to stay up to date.
And when you have had a very bad kind of undergraduate training, there is also a lot of unlearning.
Yeah. Yes, you have. So there will be, I mean, if you have the kind of academic backgrounds that we do, you have to undergo a process of unlearning. So for me, it was in microscopy classes. I think the only reason I could, you know, complete it is because the instructor told me, no, there are no exams. You just have to do a project on your own. So I was like, okay, I mean, that I can do as long as you do not ask me, give me like a time bound exam. I'm fine with it. I mean, I can spend some nights in the microscope and get the results that you are looking for. And that requires unlearning because until then I had learned to, you know, crack exams, which is absolutely not
a different skill to doing a PhD, basically. In fact, one thing which you'll never use during your PhD probably is except for the fact that you have to get into a program. Beyond that, cracking exams is not a skill at all.
Yeah, I think our engineering experience gave us some skills to get into a program.
That is what eventually your undergraduate in a basic college only equips you to crack an exam, basically.
Interpersonal skills. Exactly. So yeah, that's how our decade started, right? 2010, you got into a master's by research in IIT Bombay.
So that was regimental 1 year of master's dissertation that I had to do, and I worked in like a very proper lab setup with group meetings every week and the way science is generally done in a decent place. So that's when this idea that I want to pursue a PhD got solidified by that point.
Exactly.
Despite me being in an environmental engineering master's program, the flexibility, with that being a very interdisciplinary field, the flexibility was such that my dissertation was in computational biology. So this is something which fundamentally we lack in our regular colleges, which needs a lot of fixing. There is no malleability. Like, you resign if you are a computer scientist, you won't even look at applying your discipline to something else. So that is something I learned. So I think that holds me in good stead. I'll say that I am not an expert in any of it, but that equipped me to survive doing research, because when you read papers, it requires you to fathom a lot of information and factor in stuff from different disciplines and so on. So that is what I gained during my master's.
So moving on from, did you continue your PhD research in the same lab?
Thing is that my master's dissertation was in between two supervisors. So I continued my PhD under one of them. So
okay, all right, makes sense. I mean, in my case, just for our listeners, I mean, I do not have a master's degree. So I finished my BTech. I did a year in TIFR, and I in the US it is not required.
Even with my master's, I had the option of converting my final semester of my master's to a PhD. So anyone who has like a certain cutoff of CGPA during your master's till your final semester, once you finish off your final semester thesis, you won't get a degree in that case. You can directly convert your master's degree to a PhD degree and continue working on it without having to re-enroll again. But I didn't go through that for some stupid reason, but eventually I did. Yeah.
And that process also exists in most departments in the US. It certainly did exist in mine. So, for example, we had a few students who enrolled in the master's program and eventually converted it into a PhD program. But in my case, I mean, I applied for a PhD.
So to put it out explicitly, anyone listening to us who wants to do a PhD does not necessarily have to go through the master's route. You can directly enroll to a PhD. The only difference being that if you enroll into a PhD directly, you'll have to do more coursework. That is the only difference.
Yes. The course credits required for meeting the eligibility criteria for a qualifying exam, I believe it varies from department to department and school to school, but
more than if you were a master's. That's
Yeah. So I think probably we should break here for a moment, gather our thoughts and come back. Absolutely. So stay tuned, guys. All right, Addy. So staying on this timeline, right? So we both are in graduate programs. I think we should take a moment to describe to our listeners the process of, choosing a topic choosing a mentor. That's one of the challenging things, right? Several things can go wrong, and
very
often it does go wrong. I mean, we both have seen students drop out of a program and all those kind of things. There are many reasons why PhD could go wrong, but one of the reasons that I feel is not having a great mentor or a mentee. I mean, of course, you have to be a good mentee or you have to be a good scientist yourself, but choosing a mentor even before the thesis is also important step, in my opinion. So would you agree with that?
Yeah, totally agree. At least in my case, I had the benefit of having worked in that group for a while, which is why at that point I decided to continue. This was one main reason why I continued in IIT, as opposed to the reason originally I had decided to do a master's in IIT and then apply elsewhere for a PhD. But then when I got comfortable in a group, and when you have that rapport with your mentor, that saves a lot of headache in a degree which is otherwise a very lonely degree otherwise.
Right? Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, in my case, it was slightly different in the sense I, of course, had not worked with my PhD advisor before coming to this university. But what had happened is this was the person who had interviewed me on phone when I was in India. And at that moment, I did not really think that I'm going to work with him, but he came across as a very nice human being, a person and good to talk to. And later when I met him in one of his classes, I really liked his idea of teaching and the way he was very focused on fundamentals rather than writing long answers in his course. So that was one thing. And then we have this option of rotating in different labs, right? Mm-hmm. So at least in biology, you spend certain number of weeks or months in one lab. And in most departments, it is compulsory to do at least two such rotations before you decide on your mentor, because the department wants you to give you a chance for seeing what other potential mentors could look like. I think it is a good idea, well followed around the world and even in India right now.
So in our department, how it used to work is that the general topics would be floated and no one would obviously stick to it. But the vague outline of how the lab looks and the faculty who are looking to hire for a particular semester would float out, kind of like an open house. And for the first semester, you had the option of doing, you were not assigned a mentor.
We used to call it professors in parade, where professors looking to recruit students would kind of give like short talks and engage with them over beer or whatever. So that's when I met him and I thought, okay, you know, I have decided to do a rotation in some other lab, but because I have the option, you know, I mean, why not spend some months with him and see how it goes? The defining moment for me was, you know, he asked me about, hey, do you know about this thing? And, you know, I think for after many years, I did not bluff. I said, no, I have absolutely no idea of what this is. And he said, yeah, good. You know, I like it because I always want you to say no when you do not know, you know, rather than, you know, trying to come up with something random or garbage. You know, if you do not know, you don't know, it's not a crime. You know, you're not expected to know everything.
Which is our BTech degree, right? BTech in bullshitting.
Yeah, exactly. So even if you did not know anything, which was always the case in a Viva, we used to just bullshit around some things. And this guy, here is this guy who tells me, if you don't know, you don't know. It's okay. I mean, just say, I don't know. So I told him, even before he said that, I told him, I don't know. And he loved it. And I formed this connection. So I decided to, you know, go differ from my plans and then go and work with him for the next several years. And it turned out to be a great decision. Amazing mentor, you know, gave me my space, really cared about my graduate education, and we did some amazing research together. So that was my method of choosing a mentor. I'm not saying it's correct, but it differs from people to people. What matters is you work with a person who you think could be or you realize could be a good mentor for you.
Because in PhD, it's like a long time that you will be spending with one person. So if something goes wrong and you cannot stand that one person who is in charge of your thesis, the only other person who is largely in charge of your thesis other than you, life for the next 6-7 years turn out to be hell.
Your lab is literally your home because we sleep there.
We sleep
We often sleep there. So it is not your second. Yeah.
Most labs have beddings and stuff in a shelf.
We have couch, we have fridge, we also have alcohol if needed. So we have everything in there.
So all my so going back to this, so post the 2007 World Cup, all my World Cup watching experience has been in lab, most of it. Football and cricket. Like
same with me.
Screening it on basically the lab projector at nights and stuff like that.
Yes. And you know you have a good mentor when your mentor does not bother you saying, hey, why are you watching a match? It's like, hey, I mean, my job, I mean, I am delivering the results and the data and the analysis, and I'm contributing to the meetings and conferences, whatever. What I do in my spare time is my spare time. So that you know you have a good mentor when your mentor does not stop you from watching. So
basically, there are two kinds of mentors, right? One who there are mentors who prefer to micromanage and who would actually keep track of everything that you do on a daily or even a weekly basis. And then there are mentors who set you free. You have the ability to shape your own projects. But the problem that happens in the latter case, especially if you're not a very independently driven person, is the latter can result in a slower timeline when it comes to your graduation.
It depends on the
kind of lab you prefer. So some people prefer having this micromanaging personality on top.
So it neither options are wrong. It's basically which one you prefer.
Because I went to a lab in which the option was like it was a much more friendly lab environment. But the only issue was that my boss, again, so there are like perks and negatives to it. So my boss was basically he had training in polymer physics and also computational polymer physics. So these terms will all seem like very vague, like a collection of different subjects. Like, so he himself was not a biologist, quote unquote, but we were all working in a department of biology. So my lab was full of people with degrees in engineering, degrees in maths, MSc in math, MSc in physics, all kinds of people. So that also happened to be a fun place to work with because everyone had a different skill set. So if you end up getting stuck in something, you always have another person to actually talk to. So that is something I enjoyed in my lab. But my boss would never give you an outline as to what he expects from a project till it actually reaches a phase where, okay, there is a paper coming out or stuff like that. But except for the broad umbrella idea, he wouldn't actually micromanage and tell you exactly what is to be done, which helped in my case. But a lot of people also didn't end up preferring it because they would have preferred a much more well chalked out outline, because that is how we are trained during all our other degrees. Yeah. Right? Largely, we are told to, we are given set targets and we achieve that in a periodical fashion.
Yeah. And on similar lines, you know, what really, I mean, what I enjoyed was, you know, your mentor letting you work on a field that he or she is not an expert in. So what that basically means is, of course, you know, you're seeking your advisor's guidance, but then you are working on a completely different field, which not only benefits you, but eventually, you know, after some years, your advisor becomes an expert in that field through you. Yeah. Right? Because, I mean, no papers are published in isolation. I mean, eventually you write a draft, your advisor is looking at it, your advisor is helping you analyze the data and all those things. But that person initially was not an expert. But eventually through your work and your research, your advisor can now claim that, you know, I mean, including you, that now that your lab or your setting is an expert in so and so field.
Again, a very high risk strategy if you are an advisor. Because a lot more can go wrong as opposed to groups in which the lab prefers to stick to a comfort zone and then continue to publish papers much faster in that area. So,
yes. I mean, I personally liked the former approach.
Yeah.
I mean, I would probably feel very constrained if I am in a lab which kind of churns out paper in a conveyor belt fashion.
Because even in my case, my advisor had no expertise in the thesis that I was working on. But over the years, what I used to gain from him was the larger intuition about how certain things should work, as opposed to specific domain expertise.
Exactly. And this is and this is very specific to biology, where you basically become better with experience. I mean, a comparison being, it's not a great comparison, but a comparison has been made by many people about mathematicians. People say that, you know, mathematicians are at their best when they start out. Right. It's completely opposite with, I mean, in my opinion, with biologists, where the more avenues they explore, the better they get.
Because there is always this percolation of ideas from one discipline to the other, which happens over time. And all you have is, like, eventually, if you are an expert, you may be an expert in one field, but you may not have the domain expertise in the other field. But your intuition develops as you work on more problems, basically. As to the routes that you should take and the approaches that one should use. So the larger umbrella of the tools that one should be using is what one gains from one problem. And I have seen a lot of labs stagnating due to the fact that they do not flip ideas. They continue to remain in the comfort zone of just one specific protein or one specific molecule that they continue working on for 20 years. Not to diss on them. Those groups make huge contributions sometimes to a field, because of course
but then again it depends upon you whether that is the kind of
if you don't get constrained personally by such an atmosphere.
Exactly. And then I mean, a refreshing thing for me was the year that I joined my dissertation lab, a very experienced postdoc left that lab a few months before I joined. And what happened with her departure, we lost the expertise that our lab had gained over the last 7-8 years. And we had developed this niche where or at that time I was not there, but they were the world experts in that particular field. And with the departure of some graduate students and the postdoc, what happened is we lost some I would not say expertise, because that remains in form of literature, but we gained new personnel in the lab with new ideas,
which is largely a problem with academia, which we should also highlight here, the fact, because you said that as opposed to industry and companies, continuity is not the strength of academic groups, research groups. Would you agree? Because a PhD student has a lifespan of a generation, lasts around 6 years, let us say. But very often the transfer of there isn't a very smooth transition that you would like, even though a PhD student spent 6 years there, right? While all of your knowledge is there in the form of a research article or protocols and stuff like that, but it never really has that smooth transition. Certain labs have managed to do it, but very often it doesn't, right?
I mean, absolutely. For certain labs, it becomes the bread and butter to survive. I mean, it is also related to the vicious grant writing cycle, where, you know, you get money if you write a grant on what you are an expert on, right? But then it becomes challenging to write a grant on something you are not an expert on. So what determines whether you'll get money or not is what kind of preliminary data you are showing. And that preliminary data more or less comes from grad students or postdocs who, let's say, worked on it for some time, you know, deciding to go slightly off route and found something exciting. So, it is delinear in many cases, and also like a vicious cycle in some cases. So, at this point, I should acknowledge that a lot depends upon luck. In the sense, if I was not in the lab at a time when this churning was happening, I wouldn't have gotten the opportunity to explore a completely new aspect of what my lab actually studies.
But this is this brings you this raises an interesting question, right? So exploration is a large part of what you do in your PhD. In fact, I would go on to say that in hindsight, if I were to ask myself the question as to how much time it actually would take to do the work I put in my thesis, in hindsight, probably I could do all of it in a year and a half, right?
But yeah, I mean, so let's say if my doctoral thesis has 20 figures, right? And each figure has, let's say, on an average, 5 or 4 images. Mm-hmm. It's basically, I don't know, like 10 experiments that I can do probably in a year and a half. But it doesn't happen in a linear fashion, right? I mean, I'm probably one experiment worked in a year, that kind of
thing. When anyone here reads a newspaper article on science and a very neat story is put out that a group cracks cure for Parkinson's, some over glamorized story, right? Generally, I would say risk and say always that is not the case. Stories are not linear. No one sets out to say solve cancer when you begin with. That is not as opposed to the Bollywoodized version. We have often discussed this, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's so you might get into a doctoral program thinking that I'm going to develop a theory, a therapy for cancer, which is fine. I mean, that could be your motivation. Mm-hmm. But what matters is, you know, over the years, you develop that goal and it automatically gets further refined and polished and you eventually end up working in a very small niche, right? I mean, your initial motivation could be that. What you read in a newspaper, mm-hmm. Over the years,
the grassroots reality is basically quite far away from that, right? You tend to deviate a lot, and actually, what you gain in the process of deviation is actually what you gain during your PhD. So, as opposed to say, a lot of people would often have this question, right? If someone looks at a thesis title. You look at most thesis titles, it will be as niche as it gets. You wouldn't generally a large of, I would say 90% of the thesis would only make like a piecemeal kind of an advancement to a field, as opposed to the general perception that a PhD thesis is completely different to an undergraduate thesis, and you'd be expected to change the understanding of a field. That is not how it works, right? Because most of the time is spent in actually finding your way, finding your questions. Sometimes to go from path A to B, you would have taken like C, E, X, and all these other routes, failed at it.
Yeah.
And as you said, like if your thesis has 100 figures, you would probably have had a 900 other figures which actually failed, right?
Exactly. I mean, they may not be useful. I mean, they may not be useful to your thesis or a story, but I mean, that's how you learn, right? I mean, I think the most important thing that I have learned in my PhD is to think, right? How do you think like a scientist?
It's no different to a lawyer, right? I would say that constructing arguments based on facts is what generally the training is about, rather than what you end up producing. Most fundamental research PhDs, at least the kind that we have done, is not about changing the face of the planet, right?
No, it is not. I mean, it is basically just scratching the surface of a problem in most.
And cases. If you have like 100 people scratching the surface, you enter some depth at some point. So it is all very iterative in that fashion. So when someone says that. So all of these very naive arguments that why academia should be funded when there is nothing coming out, it is not one PhD thesis that you should be looking at, or a title of one thesis that actually makes a difference. If you go back and look at what Einstein's thesis was, it was about figuring out diffusion coefficients of stuff in water. If I tell you that naively today, most people would think of it as something very obscure and pointless, right? Fundamental research in academia should be viewed funding in academia should be viewed at least in a different way when it comes to fundamental research, at least, is because it is not about the immediate objective in that.
But I also feel that, you know, we scientists have traditionally not been, good citizen scientists, I would
say. Or good communicators.
Because, my thesis in one line had things like, material properties of a particular biological polymer. Now, like, if you read just the title and try to get an idea of what it means, you'd think it's a physics thesis, right? And then let's say the thesis is very famous and it gets a lot of media attention, and a news reporter would actually quote it saying, novel material properties have been discovered in polymers. I mean, that is not true. What I'm trying to say is
there are I worked on something which was more physics of biological polymers on the other end, but my thesis title.
Yeah, so I used biological experiments to say that something. I used biological experiments to pretty much say that someone or some physicist has to work on it.
Yeah,
because I could not do it because I was not a physicist,
I used to work on theories which a biologist had to go and test. So that is where the interdisciplinary part of it comes through.
Yeah, and it is funny because basically during my thesis defense, my committee member was like, I thought there will be a lot of physics, and I was very scared to come into this defense because I do not have a background in physics. So, I mean, we were like, neither I nor my advisor are experts in physics, but what we are trying to say is, if this has to go ahead, a physicist has to work on it.
This is a classic thesis defense question, right? So I was asked whether my thesis would be better done by in the department of physics or by someone who had a degree in physics or a degree in chemistry. This was the question I was asked. And all this is happening in the department of biology, so...
I and my advisor, we spent several months debating about this, and at one point we actually decided to collaborate with a physicist. The problem was, he was the guy available and responding to us, but he was an aerospace engineer. So you can imagine, right? Biologists wanting knowledge of physics, approaching an aerospace engineer.
And similarly, my thesis advisory group happens to be, one of them happened to be a professor in physics, the other is a mechanical engineer PhD in a master's in electrical engineering and eventually a PhD in biology. So all these mixed creatures somehow end up influencing your life. So it breaks, it shatters all myth of, are you a electrical engineer? So those kind of myths get broken, right? So no one is anything, basically. Your definition is not by the...
Yeah, I mean, it basically, this experience, you know, like, opens up horizons for you. Yeah. I mean, new horizons that you did not know existed. So, I mean, and especially related to this, I mean, one of my most difficult challenges was to convince myself that I can think outside what I know. In the sense, I do not have to be restricted by the knowledge or the possibility that I am aware of. So if I were to do an experiment, I can think, I mean, I would not say out of the box, because that term out of the box kind of...
Because there are no boxes, first of all. Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, it took me good few years to realize that, you know, I mean, I can just think whatever I want. I can set up experiments based on n number of, hypotheses, and then choose to test few of them. And those can be anything. I can get as basically being creative. And you in science, you have to be as creative as an artist, you know, to get to your answers in most
cases. Exactly. And in most cases, if you are not an expert in that domain, you will definitely find someone else who has better expertise in something else. So that's how the pieces are plugged in, basically.
Yes. I mean, if you have, very rarely will it happen that, you know, you come up with a question that only you are asking. What happens is someone else has asked that question, but did not work on it.
As long as the question is interesting, you definitely
Yeah.
have other people asking that question.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, if it is an interesting science question, someone has at least at this stage, so many scientists working and with papers available to everyone pretty much on the planet. I mean, questions have been asked and somewhere or the other it has been written, or someone has probably discussed about it in a paragraph. But I mean, you are probably lucky if you have thought about it and are working on it. So it is your job to go and seek out those people who have spent like few years thinking on it and reached some form of conclusion or
And
idea.
there is also this added benefit as to even if two groups are working on the same problem exactly at the same time and they have very similar results, they may interpret the same results in a completely different fashion, and both of them might actually end up contributing in ways that even if they had met each other, they might not. So all you can have all these possibilities happening. So there is.
And most discoveries that we are seeing now, I would say in the last 30 years or so, are a result of such kind of collaboration and
Contribution.
contribution.
And in most cases, if you look at the kind of Nobel Prizes in chemistry, for example, most of them have been in the field of biology. So that
Yeah,
helps you a lot.
and I mean it, and right now, I mean, people who do amazing work in my field of cell biology and developmental biology are actually people like physicists and
Lot of
electrical and
mechanical
mechanical
engineers, right?
engineers.
The structural engineers
Yeah.
who get into biology.
Ab
So there is a
ab
lot that even
absolutely.
engineers learn from biological systems. So, and the entire notion that the fact that both of us vaguely work in the interface of physics and biology, which is biophysics, either side of yours might be more biology heavy and mine might be more physics heavy, but largely,
Yeah.
these are disciplines which have a lot of room for computer scientists, biologists, physicists, and all of them. So, if you are a engineer right now working in, if you are someone pursuing undergraduate studies, I think we should get rid of this mental hierarchies and boxes, which says that बायोलॉजी पढ़ो तो तुम्हारा एनालिटिकल स्किल्स कम है, तुम मैथमेटिशियन हो तो ज्यादा दिमाग है. द रियल वर्ल्ड डजंट वर्क दैट वे. एसेंशियली
No, I mean the most successful. I mean, like I said, I
वेंकी
mean,
रामकृष्णन हैज अ पीएचडी इन फिजिक्स, राइट? सो
I mean, apart from Nobel Prize winners, I mean, departments throughout the US are actually looking for, they actually encourage engineers to apply. In the sense, you do not have to be a biology major. I mean, concepts in biology can be taught to you in probably two
And in
semesters,
fact, an engineer
or
can
in
ask questions in biology which are completely like a path breaking for that discipline, and similarly the
Yeah.
other way around. So there is no reason why, if you have an interest in the larger principles of how science works, that you should
Yeah.
try and there is nothing which is offbeat or off path in science.
And it's not about just about biology. I mean, the same goes for chemistry and
Or
even,
economics
like
maybe,
things
like you
like,
might be a good physicist
oh
and
yeah,
add to
yeah.
economics and social sciences.
Oh yeah, I mean economics is like a, I mean if you have a scientific background and if you have an inclination towards economics, I mean the possibilities
So
are
which is why
numerous.
the Nobel Prize in economics this year has a lot to it gains a lot from drug trials were conducted, right? How
I mean exactly. So Abhijit Banerjee,
yeah.
right? I mean he worked on randomized controlled trials, but I mean that idea comes
Biology
from
in some
randomized controlled trials in pharmaceutical companies or biology in
general.
general. So that's how interdisciplinary any field of investigation or research is
So,
right
Mayuk,
now.
I would ask you this question before we go towards wrapping this up. One is,
Yeah.
why does all this take so much time? If you were to produce 20 figures in a couple of years, it is basically a set of 15, 20 experiments, right? Why does it take 3 years? Is it worth 6, 7 years?
Yeah, I mean, if I would choose to answer the easier answer, it I would say things like Netflix, Amazon Prime, ESPN, Cricket Info, and those kind of things. That's the easier answer because I mean, as a graduate student, you have control of your time, and pretty much you can set your day as you want to be. And there are, I mean, so many distractions
And there
right
are
now,
phases
but
of high intensity. There are phases where you do not have a break for an hour for a few weeks at a stretch, and there are phases where you have nothing to do because you have no ideas in your head also, right?
Yeah, I mean, so why does it take a long time? It's basically a combination of many factors. I mean, of course, you if you yourself are not
assuming you are a motivated human being, so I'm saying.
Yeah, assuming you are very motivated and self-driven and you have a very good mentor, there are, again, numerous things that can probably slow you down. Things like one thing that comes to my mind and that happened to me is getting scooped. So by in scientific parlance, getting scooped means, let's say, you present your work at a conference or to someone and then the other person gets an idea.
Basically, bala, Hindi filmon mein jo hota hai. Someone is making a movie, but someone else ended up making it before. So,
before you, and sometimes it is not a crime because you know you presented the idea. That is the basic. That is basically the concept of a scientific meeting. You presented the idea. Someone worked, had the means and resources to work on it before you. He or she did that and published a paper that works. And oftentimes it is actually bordering bioethics or scientific ethics, where you know
you don't even acknowledge another group for.
You don't acknowledge other group, and then you basically take a photo of the poster and then go back and you know manipulate it in some way and try to get a paper out.
This is
out.
Basically matlab yahan Gucci ka bag dekha aur fir Hong Kong mein someone else is making it.
Yeah, I mean you are geographically very close. wo area mein bahut zyada hota hai.
So there is another element which is like a very honest, even if things don't go wrong, even if things are going in a linear correct fashion, average research article takes from the point that you start writing to the point that it goes on print.
It
takes around a year.
Unfortunately, the process of scientific publication is I would say archaic right now, where it takes tremendous amount of time and you are basically.
So if we may just very quickly give people the way it is done. So whenever you think you, and generally it is your advisor who feels that, okay, you have stable enough data to work with and something which is reliable to cook up a story with, you write it in the form of a paper which has all that you outline in terms of all that you
and then basically after a couple of days of writing you realize there are 10 other experiments that have to be done
to for this story to be solid. So basically I often see parallels between this and making a movie, right?
कभी कभी आइटम नंबर डालना पड़ता है, तो उसके लिए कभी स्टेट ऑफ द आर्ट प्रूव करने के लिए थोड़ा अतरंगी एक्सपेरिमेंट्स कर लो
तुमको अगर, एंड समटाइम्स बड़ा फिल्म स्टार चाहिए तो यू इवन समटाइम्स हैव वन एडिशनल ऑथर जिसको बेसिकली शुरू में कोई रोल नहीं था लेकिन उसको दे दिया ताकि तुम्हारा पेपर फेमस हो जाए. ऐसा भी ग्रुप्स करता है, रोहित शेट्टी मैकेनिज्म बेसिकली.
And this is where the dynamics between a mentor and a mentee comes into picture. I mean sometimes, you know, let's say after 3 or 4 years you have to give the pushback saying no, you know, this experiment is absolutely not required. It would be great to have this, but we don't really want to.
But
do
at that point you often run the risk of when a paper gets reviewed. So this paper, assuming you have written it down, and which itself takes months very often. You have to go through 6 or 7 drafts many a times. You figure out in the process that your experiments lacking and so on. But when, if you have stood up for something and said that something is not necessary, the paper eventually goes out for a peer review. And if the reviewer happens to ask the same question as your boss, you happen to be in a very tight corner in that.
Yeah, so you basically you don't have any other choice but to go and do that experiment. And sometimes, unfortunately, the reviewer is almost always in your field and probably a person you know. Although most journals have blind reviewers, you sometimes pretty much have an idea who is reviewing your paper
based on the kind of comments he or she.
comments. Yeah, and then I mean, and unfortunately, sometimes that is also an avenue for scooping, where the reviewer kind of hires another person to just get that done.
And
quickly.
And but, he can keep your paper on hold.
Yeah, so all sort of unethical things happen. I mean, we are not saying that the field of research is absolutely free of such activities. These do happen, unfortunately, but these are
even in a good day, end to end, from start to end, publishing a paper would take at least a year in most cases.
At least a year. I mean, a year would be like a good timeline, I would say. Yeah, definitely more than a year in most cases.
So if you are lucky, you can do it in a year. That's all.
And there are other reasons why things slow you down, right? Let's say you spend a lot of time working on one subject, and then a couple of years you figure out, hey, it is not that exciting. So the thing is, you have an option of publishing it. I mean, you know that it is not very exciting. You publish it in a journal, which is, I would say, like tier 2, tier 3, or below your top journals of your choice. I mean, that is again a debate between you and your advisor, whether you want to get it published or just or not, those kind of things. So there, right now, I mean, we should also mention that, you know, mental health, a lot of the time students are, you know, depressed, they feel alone, and, you know, they are not, or they are very reluctant to seek out help. That delays things a lot.
And you often go through phases, which I personally have gone through a few phases, where you do not have the will to, you do not see a thesis ending, right? At some point, it happens in between, like, and you are often tempted to say that, arre chhod do, kyun karna hai types, right?
Yeah, I mean, there are some seasons where I'm like, you know, I just do not want to do this experiment. I mean, it's not working. I do not want to do it. Just leave it. Let me just do some other experiment of some other question that I also have on the sidelines.
So at the end of the day, it is like a batsman. On most days, things don't work.
Exactly. So these are the challenges that we faced. And I mean, whatever happens, I mean, if you are self-driven, if you are motivated, there is always light at the end of the tunnel.
And it's unlike other degrees, it's like a blank canvas. It allows you to chalk out a path which you alone would want to. Like if you want to chalk out a path which is extremely unique to you, all power is to you. So,
yeah, I mean, that is very important. I mean, it's really, really important that an early stage student or a researcher, let's say if he or she is in an undergrad degree right now, realize that PhD does not have a set coursework or a set structure. I mean, you are the driver of this car or the ship. So you are the captain of the ship, and it's up to you to decide where.
And you don't even have a highway. So you don't know. So you are even also at the same time, you are creating your own road also. So it is sometimes like that also. So
yeah, it's like you are flying a plane and cooking at the same time.
So it is all sort of weird things. So
something like that. Yeah. So this is how, I mean, we experienced all these things. Especially in biology, what happens is you come to a point where you have to choose what is next. Let's say if you're doing a PhD in computer science, you either get into a professorship straight, or in most cases you have a good job lined up in the industry after your thesis defense or PhD. But in biology, oftentimes we are asked or required, or it is absolutely essential for us to do a postdoc. So Adi, I mean, is this a good time to highlight some of the choices you had to make for this transition after your PhD?
So I had, I was applying for my postdoc for a long time, right? So we start applying for a postdoc roughly around the time you know that you're going to submit your thesis. So in between, I had the choice of going to an industrial research lab. There is one in New York, which I had a choice of joining, and the other being a more conventional academic group. So I decided to go for the latter. Because I didn't want to eventually regret not having tried out the conventional academic path. So, and I'm still at it. So what changes in between your PhD and postdoc is that the attempt is to do something which you haven't done in your PhD thesis. And often like in completely different disciplines. So that is the main objective. So that's largely where I am at. But there is this common notion of universities being full of people who are in their 30s and stuff. It is not just because of the fact that it is purely because of the fact that academics takes time. Largely, people don't choose to be underpaid and work in a university in their 30s. It is because most 35 is a young age for a faculty to join in a conventional university. So,
Especially for a biologist. Especially
for a biologist or any fundamental researcher, for that matter.
Yeah. I mean, it was, I mean, towards the end of PhD, I mean, I realized that I wanted to basically go into industry. And that was what I was leaning towards, being a scientist in an industry. But again, I mean, you know, I also did not want to regret the fact that, you know, how a postdoc would have been. I mean, would I have opened new doors for myself? So that's why I chose to do a postdoc. And then very quickly, fortunately for me, I realized that, no, I think the kind of work and the kind of expertise that I have gained, I would be really useful in the industry. Mm-hmm. And that's why, you know, after a certain very short time frame in the postdoc, I realized that, you know, I should kind of make this switch into the industry. And therefore, I mean, here I am.
But regardless, right? So whenever you move out after your PhD, the onus should be on doing something which you haven't done in your PhD. Although the temptation often exists of doing
absolutely
which you are good at, right?
Yeah.
You have spent 7 years in getting expertise in one discipline, and the temptation often is to do more of the same. But
exactly. I mean the postdoc research and the lab that I chose is completely different than what I was working in my PhD. Hmm. So, like I said before, I mean, in PhD, I have learned to think and I have learned to pose interesting new questions and think about those questions in a logical manner. Mm-hmm. And that's how during the period of writing my thesis, I came up with some questions that I wanted to answer. Mm-hmm. And that's how I chose my postdoctoral lab. But it is like, it's a completely different field, a completely different subject. Mm-hmm. But eventually I realized that, I mean, the science side aside, I realized I want to be in a different setting. Also, it had something to do with the fact that, you know, in the last decade, I have been only in academia and I wanted to try something new and I would perhaps say more adventurous. And that's why it led me to seek industrial positions, which I would say between the both of us, we are in a great position to answer questions from listeners or anyone at that stage of their career where they're deciding between one and the other, because between both of us, I mean, we have the expertise of every possible avenue available to a researcher or a scientist.
That is true. But at the end of the day, the only thing I would say is that after the end of PhD, you often have only the sense of relief and no happiness. Often it is not a feeling of happiness at all.
Mostly it is relief.
And one thing that you clearly know about is what you do not know about. So rather than what you know.
I think apart from relief, the most, I would say, heartening feeling was that there is this small little topic in which I am the expert and no one else knows more than me.
PhD is, right? You are in a very tiny topic.
In this particular field or very tiny topic, no one else knows more than me, including my advisor. Mm-hmm. So basically the best time to graduate is when you know more than your advisor about your thesis.
And as opposed to the common doctorate in a Hollywood or a Bollywood film, jisko sab kuch aata hai.
That's not true. I mean, if you most likely are not a supermodel and a scientist at the same time.
And definitely you are not going to be hacking toasters in someone else's home just because you are a biologist. You have a PhD in biology.
Yeah, and just because you are a biologist, not every vial of liquid you handle will be colorful. Mostly it is transparent.
Okay then.
Yeah.
So that was our, most of our past decade, right?
Our better part of our 20s was spent living in a second home, which we also called lab. And we have spent countless nights sleeping in the lab couch or watching movie in our lab computer. And one of my...
Having a lot of free food during grad school. Never miss that. That is one of the best perks. And going to different places for conferences. So those are two...
Going to different places on conferences, and then because in a department you will have a lot of projectors. So at night, if you are wanting to watch a soccer match or a cricket match, you just switch on the projector, and you literally watch it on the big screen.
Like, you have a big screen at your disposal at all times. You may not have the money, but you can do all the things that money can buy. So most things that money can buy.
You go to the conference room where you are having your lab meeting in the morning, and you know, let's say if India is playing in Australia,
order pizza, or, and then
in my case, in the US, India, if the match is happening in India, it's the best time. At night, you go to the department, you switch on the projector, hook up your laptop, and the test match or the one day match, most likely in my case it was mostly the test matches, which starts in India. And then it's night here in the US, and you watch a couple of sessions, eat some more free food, and go back.
A lot of free food, so you'll end up saving a lot of money. A lot of good food in conferences, like very high quality food, very often. So those are the perks which no one else will tell you. This is a very niche content on this podcast, and.
You meet so many people, right? Not just your lab mates, but then, you know, sometimes you very early.
Completely different disciplines, like Nobel laureates who are very old now and who are there just going around giving talks and stuff. So,
I mean, people have a very, a misconstructed idea of how a Nobel laureate is or behaves. I have happened to meet a couple of them. When I was in my postdoc, the floor beneath my lab floor housed a Nobel laureate, right? And then, he was very old. And then if you go to that part of the lab on that floor, you know, he had like so many plants outside. It was like, and if you talk to him, he was like so polite and so nice, almost like a grandfatherly feeling. So it's not like people are crazy, you know. I mean, most scientific awards will not make you crazy.
Again, a myth which is spread through Bollywood and Hollywood films. मतलब साइंटिस्ट मतलब वो पागल नहीं रहता ऐसा. उसका लंबा बाल है, वो शेविंग नहीं किया है 10 साल से. मतलब सब कुछ भी.
और अगर हम लोग जैसा है तो ये फोर्थ सीट जैसा पॉडकास्ट भी रिकॉर्ड करते हैं, जहाँ पे लोगों को फालतू का गाली देते हैं.
मतलब हर तरह का रहता है शेप्स और साइज़ेस में. सो एनीवन हु वांट्स टू गेट फ्री फूड शुड डेफिनेटली गेट इनटू ग्रेड स्कूल.
अमेजिंग अमेजिंग. सो इज दिस अ रैप अप फॉर दिस एपिसोड.
सो दिस इज लाइक एन अटेम्प्ट टू, बहुत लोग हमको बोला कि हम लोग अपने बारे में बताए नहीं कभी, तो दिस वॉज सो सैडली राहुल वॉज नॉट पार्ट ऑफ दिस एपिसोड, बट वी सून प्लान टू डू वन सच एपिसोड विथ हिम अगेन. सो
I mean, absolutely. I mean, we have some episodes lined up, especially one of them being the decade review, which we have actually made the draft of. And once all three of us are together, we are looking to do a review.
Because ये पूरा decade है तो थोड़ा दिन रुक सकते हैं अपना listener.
बहुत time है reflect करने के लिए.
Okay then.
All right, guys. Thank you for listening. Tune in once we drop our next episode. Thank you so much. Goodbye. Goodbye. Thank you.